The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory, a Pasadena-based marketing and advertising agency that specializes helping healthcare, consumer goods, clean tech, and aerospace companies achieve rapid sustainable growth. Echo Factory CEO Mike Schaefer is a co-founder and organizer of Friday Coffee Meetup. If you're interested in how Echo Factory can help your company achieve rapid sustainable growth, you can learn more at echo-factory.com. Every week, the Friday Coffee Meetup brings together innovators, startups, investors, tech companies, and entrepreneurs at the cross-campus co-working space in Pasadena. You can learn more about upcoming meetups and how you can attend in person at fridaycoffeemeetup.com.
Let's welcome EPEN.
All right. Kind of feels like a stand-up comedy here, right? I don't know, for some reason. But anyway, all right. So thanks for inviting me to give you guys a talk. Venture is a weird space. I don't have a lot of stuff to talk about. I don't think I'm smart to talk about business side. So I'm gonna talk about things we look at as venture capitalists for you guys, right? A lot of them is based on building MVP, because that's the number one thing we look at is your product, right? So, and really, I put the title as for scientific founders, because we look at a lot of scientific founders and scientific projects, but it's really for everybody, right? So even if you are not a scientist, this thing should be applicable to you guys. Okay. All right. So just a little bit PR about Embark Ventures. This is some very sort of like fun fact about us. $45 million fund one. We will do about 25 investments. We're based in Santa Monica. We do pretty early stage, pre-seed, seed, and Series A round. Generally, valuation less than $20 million. So pre-revenue, but obviously post-R&D stage. We do anywhere from quarter million check to $2 million initial check. And then we obviously reserve a lot for follow-on investments for Series A and B. And we do sector-wise, we are quite broad from bio, cybersecurity, manufacturing, material, robotic sensors, you name it. So as long as there's a good scientific founders on the team and there's good IP around the business, we'll take a look. So we were pretty broad in terms of sectors. And obviously, geographic, we are based in SoCal, Santa Monica. So we try to spend a lot of time in the SoCal area, both Pasadena, also just the general greater Los Angeles area, as well as Irvine and also San Diego. But we also have a venture partner in Boston. So we spend a lot of time in Boston area and also Bay Area, obviously. So yeah, so that's a little quick PR. If you guys want to take a picture of that, whatever. But I'll feel free to share it on social media. All right, it's two partners, Peter, who spoke here before last year, I think, and me. We both worked at different private investment firms before on the VC side, also private equity side. We are actually, a fun fact is, both of us are PhD dropouts. So we were both failed scientists. So we always want to become scientists and just really couldn't do it. It's just so freaking hard. Become a VC is a lot easier than become a scientist. And that's why we sort of want to back scientists. But in any case, we made it. So, that's actually the main reason why we want to start Embark, is to actually find other smarter people to back. All right, if you want to take a picture, yeah. Very, very handsome guy, by the way. So, all right, so it's a little bit more about our portfolio companies. Even more PR throwing at you. It is the names of our portfolio companies. We have about 16 companies for the fund one now. Spans out of all these sectors. Please do not share this on social media, because some of them are not unannounced. But whatever. All right. Before I talk about MVP and seed reads and seed and all that stuff, let's talk a little bit about why Southern California versus Silicon Valley. I know some of you guys might been to Silicon Valley. It's not good, right? So it's a mess. And here we have a sunshine, all that stuff. But more importantly, if you look at Southern California, the whole market is very undercapitalized, right? So, there's a little bit of data science here, but, especially these two data is very interesting. We are significantly undercapitalized, right? So, about, more than seven hundred, whatever this number is, it's from outside capital, right? So we don't have any inside capital from SoCal, right? So that's where we come in. We want to become the, your go-to VC for raising seed round or pre-seed round, right? So obviously, there's a lot of other great VCs on the market now, but we are still very, very much undercapitalized. So, and I think it's a great market, right? I mean, look at this. This is a great event, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs here, right? So it's one thing. And then another reason here, obviously, we have a lot of top engineering research schools, right? So that's one of the reasons we want to stay close with Pasadena and talk to you guys, because we know here has a lot of smart people and smart engineers and smart scientists, all that stuff. And also, it's a fun fact, we actually graduate the most engineers in the United States, even more than Bay Area, surprisingly. So, yeah, that's a fun fact. But, obviously, a lot of people move to Bay Area after they graduate, right? So we have to retain them, have to let them stay here. Okay, all right. So that's PR, and that's done. Let's talk about, raising seed money from VC and a simple checklist. So I like to keep things simple. I don't like bullshit. I don't like, I like to make things really, really simple. So it's really not many things to do if you raise seed money or pre-seed money. So I just make a little list here. So the number one thing is the product and IP, which we're going to spend a little bit of time talk about today. Just disclaimer, I'm no expert in building product and building IPs, whatever, right? This is my observation from, other companies being a VC, right? So don't take this as a holy Bible, whatever, of building a product, right? So it's really just my observation to the community and to the ecosystem. And obviously, the second thing is go-to-market strategy, right? You need to have a go-to-market strategy to go to VC, to talk to VC. Otherwise, just good luck. The third thing is tractions. I mean, this is you want to have a little bit of tractions, but obviously for pre-seed and seed, oftentimes the traction can be very limited. So we're going to talk a little bit more about how we actually look at the VC, how we actually look at tractions for pre-seed and seed. And fourth one, round size. This is tricky, right? It's really about how much money you need and how much money you want to raise, right? So, and we'll, I guess you can ask me questions about it later. We won't spend much time talking about round size. And venture scale, this is very important. A lot of time, actually, by building the right product, you'll actually figure out if if your company is venture scale or not, right? Venture scale basically means you can actually go through the J-curve growth, and venture money actually will help you, right, versus the curse, right? Because venture money is not easy. Once you take it, it could be a problematic thing, right? So I would really encourage a founder to think a lot about venture skill and is your product actually a venture skill business, right? So, and obviously, the last thing is the investor leads and introductions, right? Because, you sort of wants to talk to an investor when you're raising money, right? So, yeah, so I mean, this is obviously not the everything. It's not like a very complete list, but it's the important thing you need to do, right? So before we go fundraise. All right. So and then the second thing I want to talk about is the do's and don'ts. Again, I just like to make things simple. So this is a little. I see a lot of founders make mistakes, and I see a lot of founders that do it correctly, right? So. But obviously, that's again not a complete list, right? But some of the important things I see. So number one, start a conversation very early, right? And we're going to talk about how important MVP is. But really, whether you are building MVP or whether you are talking to customers, when they're talking with VCs, you just need to start a conversation early. Don't be afraid of talking to people, right? So, and then the second thing is only pitch to the right investor, right? Like, for example, if you are, doing a social media app, you just shouldn't really talk to me, right? So we just don't do media. We just don't do, apps, right? So it's just a waste of time for both of us, right? So pitch only the right investor, right? And then, hustle for lead, not the followers, is very, very important, because you just don't want to have a situation where nobody is going to lead you around, right? This is for I guess first-time founders. A lot of time they are going with a lot of smaller checks, smaller follower checks, but really couldn't find a lead, right? So, and another one is move on when one heard no, right? I mean, this is I think you guys heard a couple times, but venture is such a VCs are a bunch of assholes in my opinion, but because we say no 99% of the time. That's why every venture has to. Asshole to some founders, because we see no 99% of the time. We look at 1,000 deals and we are only investing in 10 deals, right? So it's very, very low rate. So, if you heard no, it doesn't mean your company's bad, right? So it means you need some change and maybe, literally a little bit, right? So, but definitely move on when I heard no. And don't is, I think it's also very important. I mean, number one is don't be dishonest, right? It's just, you know, we like honest founders. And don't be arrogant, right? I mean, you know, I mean, everybody's a smart here. I mean, nobody's stupid, right? If you're too arrogant, it's just, I mean, for us at the VC and also for founders, you kind of want to, you know, you want to work with people that you really like instead of people, you know, I mean, life is short, as we know, right? So you don't want to work with people you don't like, right? So and then another don't is do not use ridiculous data. For example, our company has $1 trillion TAM, or, you know, like we have, you know, 1,000 pipelines, whatever. I don't know. Just don't use ridiculous data, right? People will notice. And you know, another thing is, like, do not ask for NDA when you talk to VCs. There's a lot of posts about it, because not every VC, like, nobody signs NDAs. It just, it's very rookie mistake to ask for sign NDA. It's like, you know, typically, VCs will not ask, you know, founders to sign NDAs, but, you know, so we shouldn't expect, you shouldn't expect VCs to sign NDAs. Another thing is, you know, obviously worry too much about valuation, right? So we're talking about, I think another good way to put it is we're talking about value creation, not valuation, right? So we need to create value versus, you know, actually have a paper gains, right? So, all right, so that's a little bit of the checklist. And then let's talk about MVP. The reason why I want to talk about MVP is at VC, especially doing C stage and pre-seed stage, it's really not many things to look at, right? It's the team, it's the market, and it's the product, right? And to be honest, most of the time, there isn't a product at pre-seed or C stage, right? So what we are really looking at is just a minimal viable product. It's, you know, as the name suggests, it's the most viable solutions you can actually present to your customer, to your investors, right? So, and obviously, at different stage, there's the product definition is different, right? So, and I made this little, I guess, whatever call it, table to show you guys the, you know, what we think the product and traction at round size could, you know, should looks like, right? Obviously, again, this is based on our experience. It's nothing, you know, set on stones, and you can ask questions later, but if you're talking about C stage, if you look at the product, really we're looking at building or already build an MVP. That's the most important thing for C stage. And traction-wise, once you have the minimum viable product MVP built, you can show some early evidence of product market fit. That's why you want to build an MVP. And we can talk about a little bit of how you actually show that to investors. And then obviously round size-wise, you know, depends on what type of company you are. You know, you could be a, you know, semiconductor company, which you need, you know, $5 million to build an MVP, right? Because you need to do fabrication. Or you could be an app company. You could be a social media app where you only need $100. And maybe not that cheap, but like $100,000 to build an MVP, right? So that's why the range is huge for seed round, right? So you see, you know, $500,000 seed round, but there's also, we did a, you know, $6 million seed round, right? So a lot of the round size depends on what type of MVP you want to build, right? Or you are building, right? So, okay, yeah, I mean, and also, you know, Series A, obviously, hopefully you'll finish your MVP and you can really, really go to commercialization, right? And a lot of people, I added this seed extension here. Just, you know, nowadays, as you all know, the economy is, you know, a little bit softer. So there's a Series A crunch, right? So a lot of founders, a lot of companies cannot raise Series A on time, right? So a lot of times they have to raise a seed extension round, or they call it like seed plus or seed A, seed one, whatever call it, right? So in my opinion, this is actually a very important topic to talk about, because a lot of time people raise a seed round and they actually build an MVP with very early attractions, but not enough attraction to Series A. Right, so at this time, you know, you might want to think about the seed extension run, or people call it bridge run before, right? So, no questions?
What do they expect in each of these? What do the investors
and VCs expect? So, I'll talk a little bit about that in later on, in sort of like you know, KPI stage, or what we are looking at for the MAP. But I would say, if you look at the tractions, that's kind of the way, or what we are looking at, right? So, for seed run, we are looking at early evidence of product market fit,
and
right?
We will take questions at the end so we can get them.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Sounds good. But good question. So, my point is, seed extension is, in my opinion, is a special type of round where you already build the MVP, you have early traction, but not enough traction, right? And that's tough because there could be, you know, frankly speaking, your product sucks, right? And it's just not a good company, right? And it could be you just need more time, right? And in that case, you know, it's definitely case by case, and you need to really think hard when you are in this seed extension situation, right? So and that's why a lot of venture capitalists do not do bridge round, right? Because it could be bridge to nowhere, right? So and it's similar to the founders, right? So, all right. And then, you know, why we care about MVPs, right? That's also a very important thing, right? So in the perfect world where you work with SoftBank, for example, you have limited resources, right? Yeah, you know, let's not care about MVPs. Let's just make the product, right? So, but the truth is, you know, we have limited resources, right? You cannot build the product you want at the day one, right? For most people, right? And another thing is proof of concept, right? Because a lot of time when you start a company, it's really the, you know, it's really a thought or really it's IP from a lab at Caltech, right? So you need to prove, you know, this stuff really works, right? So, and you don't want to spend, you know, hundreds of million dollars to prove this thing work, right? So what if it doesn't work, right? It's just, you know, it's done. So you want to do a, you know, spend as less money as possible to prove it, right? And then the third one is, you know, market validation, right? So AKA business and marketing, right? So which is very trivial, right? So we all here at some level wants to make money, right? If you start a company, you all want to make money. You want to make sure, you know, there's a business and there's market for it, right? And building MVP cheap, it's a good way to test it, right? You know, give your customer a version 1.0 or version, you know, version 0, a beta version, whatever you call it, to test if it's actually a market needs, right? So, and I put this thing, I mean, this is very, you know, widely available on the internet, but what's the top reason startup fails, right? I mean, if you look at the number one reason, it's no market needs, right? You build something people do not want. And it's very common, right? Surprise, very common, right? Like, I don't know, you're building a pizza machine, which is, people actually want that. But like, for example, right, you build something people do not want, right? And building MVP cheap, you can sort of know that, right? If your first product, you know, your MVP, you pitch your customer, you pitch to other people, and nobody cares, that's a bad sign, right? It's really bad sign. You should move on, right? So, and obviously, another reason, second reason is run out of cash, right? And what's the reason people run out of cash? Because they spend it somewhere, right? Limited resource again, right? So, and all this reason sort of go back to you have to spend money wisely at the beginning of your company, right? So which AKA is building MVP, right? So here I just want to say like how important that is, right? So all right. And let's talk a little bit more about steps to build an MVP. Again, you know, I'm actually not really a great product guy because, you know, I'm a VC. You know, VCs knows a little bit everything, but not really everything. So, like, we know a little bit about it, but, like, you know, I'm not expertise, right? But this is things we've been seeing for our portfolio companies and what they're doing that are working, right? So, you know, let's just maybe break it up a little bit, right? So, it's a lot of steps here, but it's really not much. For example, the first step, market research, right? I would assume everybody who has a company or want to start a company have done some sort of market research, right? If you haven't, you know, rethink about it. Maybe not start a company, right? So, so you have to do market research, right? It's very important, right? And then, you know, express your idea to people, right? To your team, to your co-founder, to other people. Based on market research, by the way, right? Do not express your idea based on nothing, right? So based on the market research, express your idea, express your product, right? So and go back to the sort of like scientist founders, right? So typically, there's actually a step zero, is you have some sort of IP from the lab, right? Or from, you know, whatever research institution you work with, right? So and you want to commercialize this idea or this IP. So the first thing is you want to make sure there's a market for that, right? Because there's a lot of cool research going on in the university. I mean, I would assume 90% of them are useless right now. They'll be useful in the future, but not for right now, right? So you want to do enough market research to make sure your IP, your research is commercializable, right? Has market needs. And then you want to express your idea to, you know, your co-founders, other people. You know, you want to talk to your potential customers a little bit. I think customer discovery is very important. You want to talk to your early customers even without any product. Just basically express your idea. Hey, I'm having this IP around, I don't know, new fabrication for semiconductor. Do you think it's valid? Right. So, I mean, this type of conversation can be very powerful, right? Just to guide you through what type of product you want to build, right? So that's the second thing. Third thing, I guess, design process. I mean, this is I would say it's trivial, right? You have a process of what you want to do, right? So, and what you want to build. And then you want to list the project features, right? Based on all these things you did, right? You want to list based on my customer discovery, based on my market analysis, and based on our IP and our technology, what's the features we need to build? And in my opinion, this list of project features is very, very important. I mean, I think it's number one thing to hear. You want to list the complete feature set. Every single thing. You want to list the features you want to build for the final product, not the MVP. So here, the list of features, what I mean is the list of features for the final product, right? But obviously, you cannot add all the features to your MVP, right? And that's the number five, basically talks about, right? So, and then you want to select, we're going to talk about how you select the features later, but you want to select the top features you want to build in to your MVP, right? Because you don't want to build it. I mean, otherwise, it's not MVP, it's the product, right? So you want to select the most important features and then build the MVP, right? So you see, building MVP is actually like step five, right? I mean, there's like a lot of different steps before it, right? You need to do a lot of thinking, a lot of research before we start building our MVP, right? So, and once you build it, the more interesting thing comes over. That's back to your point, like what you need to show people, right? And that's one of the most important reasons why you need to build an MVP versus just the product directly, right? Is to actually start building and start measuring and learning about it, right? Once you have this product to go alpha or beta product to show your customers or investors, you can learning about it, right? You can also doing the changes, iterations about it, right? So and you can start adding on features to it and start making it to a real product, okay? There might be some other steps, smaller steps, step 1.1, 1.2 here, but that's a major step here, right? So, all right. And then, understand the process a little bit better, right? So this is a very famous picture people use talking about MVP. You want to build a minimal lovable product, right? So this example, right? So you want to build a car, right? You want to build a skateboard first, and then like scooter, and then bike, motorcycle, and then a car. What you don't want to build is, I want to build a car, and let's build one wheel first, right? And then let's sell that wheel. And then let's build maybe like two wheels, right? And then let's build a car, right? It's not going to happen, right? Like, for starter, like, nobody gets to buy your wheel, right? It's useless, right? So you want to build something that's useful, right? Like, because we're talking about, value creation again, right? So even your MVP needs to create some value, right? There has to be a positive value created to your customer, the society, whatever, right? So there has to be some positive value created even for the MVP stage, right? It cannot be a random thing, right? So that's the thing. So understanding process, in my opinion, is also very important. So, all right. So feedback, right? So, we talk all this thing about, the process, all that stuff, but after you build it, the feedback is the reason why you need it, right? So, and I think I found this picture. It's copyright, it's not us. It's like some sort of random, a guy on the internet. But I think it shows very clearly how this circle works, right? So, as you can see, it's a lot of iterations, right? It's a lot of feedback circle here, right? So, I would say this side, the pinpoint side, we can all say it's market discovery or it's market analysis stage, right? This little cycle, this little circle thing, is the feedback loop we want to get into, right? So basically, you want to build it, and you get the feedback, and then based on the feedback and based on other stuff, you want to have some new ideas or whatever changes, right? Let's call it new idea. And then you want to add that new idea to your product and then do the loop again, right? So that's why you want to build MVP, and that's why you want to have the feedback, right? So it's really the new idea thing here, right? So having the feedback can give you the new idea, right? So very simple, right? I mean, this is definitely not rocket science, right? Everybody can understand this. So, but surprisingly, not many people actually do this, right? I mean, this is very easy to understand, but people just don't care. I don't know why, but people just don't care. People neither don't care about the feedback, or after they get feedback, they do nothing, right? And that's very common. Right, so, and you might laugh, but it's surprisingly common than you think. So, especially when you're in the startup world, it's very hard to have a negative ideas, have negative, you know, comments, right? And a lot of the feedback are very negative about your product, which is why, you know, we are building it, because it's not going to be a perfect product, right? So you have to be okay with taking negative feels, right? Taking negative thoughts, right? So, all right. Oh, sorry. And then let's go back to the sort of like the feedback and measuring the success a little bit, right? So, for different companies, so just like again, disclaimer, for different type of companies, this could be very, very dramatically different, right? So for example, if you are, again, a semiconductor company or biotech companies, this is irrelevant, right? So just forget about this. If you are making it, for example, a new drug, this is irrelevant, right? This new different milestones. I make this as just example of generally, you know, for a regular, you know, for example, a SaaS or B2B business, what exactly is measuring of success means, right? And it's not the complete list again. So and I put three different points, like why KPI is important. And KPI is a very odd term, right? So it's not a perfect measurement of your product, but it is a very interesting way to look at the data, right? So, and then can actually tell you a lot about your product. You know, the standard metrics VCs are using to evaluate are a couple examples here, right? That's basically what VCs looking at. But again, you know, you are not building a company for the VC. You're building a company for, you know, yourself or for your co-founder and to make money, right? So you shouldn't really chase these metrics because a VC look at them. You should do this because it's important, right? So I put here is because I'm a VC and I want to look at the metrics, but this is really for your own business, right? So for example, you know, customer acquisition costs, right? I mean, aka CAC, right? I mean, this is very important, right? No matter you are a B2B business or, you know, app or a scientific, you know, or whatever, AI company, or you're building a, you know, chemical reagent company, this is all there. There's no such thing called no CAC, right? I heard a lot of entrepreneurs tell me, say, hey, you know, I don't think we have a CAC ready to give you or whatever. It's like, you know, it's not possible, right? There has to be a CAC somewhere, right? So basically, it's the amount of money you spend on sales, marketing, and all that expense on average to acquire a new customer. So every business has some sort of CAC, right? So that's one thing we look at. You know, once you build MVP, what you want to do is lower the cost, right? The better the product is, in principle, the lower the CAC is, right? So, you know, when you are building this product, when you are iterating different generations of your product, you want to make sure your product can organically grow at some level, right? So another thing is lifetime value, which is also a very important metric, kind of, you know, in my opinion, it's one of the most important things is how much money this product can make, right? So we all want to make money, right? So basically, by iterating better and better, having new generation of product, you want to make sure people are spending more money on your product. Whether you are B2B, whether you are a consumer app, whatever, you want to make sure people are spending more money and you can get more out of your product, right? And that's tricky. I mean, a different company has a different way to increase this, right? So I'm sure a lot of you are successful and, you know, you already built a business in certain skill and you see this, right? That's how basically, you know, say Uber wants to do, right? You know, Uber wants to have economic of scale and then basically extremely lower the CAC and increase lifetime value a lot, right? So that's how they do it, right? You know, another deep tech company, you know, Illumina, for example, right? So what they do, you know, is the lifetime value for Illumina customers is huge, right? Because, you know, there's no other alternative yet. So you have to use them. You have to use your, you know, consumables. You have to use your other stuff, services, whatever, right? So you want to, in a bad way, milk your customer as much as possible, right? You want to get every penny out of it, right? So that's one thing. Burn rate, again, you know, company die because of they have no cash. So you know, when you're building your MVP or building your product, you want to make sure you understand the you know, the urgency of money. You want to spend less money and achieve more, right? So conversion rate is also very important when you actually, you know, you build your product and you start selling, right? So how many people actually buying your, you know, MVPs, right? And do you think having a better feature and doing this feedback loop can actually increase your conversion rate? So here's the thing, right? So when we are looking at a company, we are not looking at one single time point. We're looking at, you know, almost a different timestamp, the growth, right? So if your conversion rate is very low for your first generation product, but for somehow you actually, you know, increase the conversion rate gradually, you know, in 1 year period of time, That's a great business, right? Or maybe your initial conversion rate is very high and then goes down dramatically. And that's a bad sign, right? So for us and also for you, you should look at it in terms of time, like a period of time versus one single point, right? So, but that's something you need to, you want to optimize for, right? It's a conversion rate. Obviously, for some of you guys have, you know, maybe SaaS or, you know, enterprise software or, you know, a social media app or some of the, you know, more user-driven companies, instead of enterprise sale, you want to make sure you track the active user as well, right? So basically, that means how many users on your platform, right? So and that's also a good way to track, is your product development working, right? Because in principle, the better your product, you know, the more user you should have, right? So and you want to make sure your feedback loop and your redesign will give you a better result on this, right? So so I mean, obviously, again, there's also a lot of other metrics, and this is also a functional of all these metrics. You know, for example, you know, CAC divided by LTV, it's a metric a lot of VC uses, and there's a lot of other very complicated analysis on the metrics you can find. For example, a friend of mine, Jonathan, at Social Capital, now at Tribe, actually posted a very good blog post on, you know, data science standing point of actually how to look at KPIs. So there's a lot of different stuff you can look at online. But here I just want to emphasize, you know, how important it is to measuring success and knowing your KPIs. And it's also very important for, you know, market segmentations, right? So by actually optimizing all these KPIs, you actually know what's the market you want to go to and what's working, what's not working, right? So, you know, because myself, you know, I was, as a scientist, I liked this data way of, you know, seeing stuff, you know, doing stuff. So having the solid data and numbers is better than just talk, right? So, all right, and then you shut up and take my money. All right.
Thank you, Yipeng. Today for questions, we only have the microphone with the lead. So if you have a question, please come up here to the left of the stage and ask it. And that way we'll pass the microphone back and forth.
Yipeng, I'll start off with a question. Can you explain the process of somebody that wants to raise VC capital? In other words, when your partner was here, he talked about the purpose of the first meeting is to get the second meeting, and the purpose of the second meeting is to get the third meeting, because you're not going to write a check after that first or second meeting, right? And at the same time, what should a founder tell you or say to you so that they can gain your interest in getting that second meeting? Because they're not going to, if they waste too much time, if they bring 100-page PowerPoint, you know, they're not going to get very far. But you probably know within like a 5-10 minute into that meeting whether or not you like it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, question. So good question. So I think to look at this question, I think it's a lot of different aspect to it. So I think the number one thing is first impression, right? So it's very hard to define first impression. But I would say, whether you are a good fit for the VC, whether you did the study beforehand, actually very does matter. Like, you know, but as an investor, we would like to talk to people who actually know us or at some level, like, know our focus, right? So if it's, if you actually did a little bit of homework before you actually pitch to an investor, meaning knowing their partners, knowing their focus, knowing their check sizes, it's actually very helpful, right? So basically, do your homework before first meeting. It's going to be, I think it's going to be very helpful to actually get a second meeting, right? Just because, you know, people like to work with folks that are, you know, have some mutual respect, right? So because we do homework before a meeting, right? We look at DAC and we do all that stuff, right? So, and we don't want to just talk to a founder where for the first 10 minutes it's all talking about very, very basic stuff, like how, like who we are and all that stuff, right? So we want to make sure the meeting goes to, you know, the real material things, you know, even the first meeting. I would say another thing is to make the first meeting clear on your mission and technology and your team, right? Do not talk about a lot of other stuff. Make sure you talk about your team a lot if you are raising seed money. Because, again, for seed stage, team is just number one thing, right? Make sure you have a good reason why these founders get together, right? Make sure you give your mission statement very clear. I think that's the 12 things are important. But I have this do and don'ts, but you know, follow the do's, right? I think you'll have the second meeting. So.
IP, question number one, does it have to be patent? Because I can protect IP in so many ways except for patent. And the follow-up right away, if it is a patent, and I'm a scientific founder coming from a university, what engagement from the university do you want to see? The university is also not too fast to give up their patents.
First question, no, we do not need to see the actually patent granted. Because we know, how pain in the ass is to actually get a patent. So what do we mean IP? I mean, first thing is actual IP, which is obviously very important to just legally protect it, but also the people know-how, right? So to prove you can actually know how to do this IP is very valuable, right? So it's the know-how behind the IP that we really cares, right? So because you have to develop your own IP at the company as well, right? So one thing we look at is really the know-how here, right? So to answer your question, that's the first question. So in terms of university involvement, I assume you're talking about tech transfer office or talking about the professor or the PIs working with the company. Yeah. I think that's more a legal thing and for operational thing versus a business standing point because, there's a lot of negotiation with different universities and different tech transfer offices have different philosophies on it. So I don't think it's the big issues here, to be honest. I think in terms of involvement, I would actually, I think it's more important to actually stay close with the research society so that you will get on top of what's new in the research society, right? So that your IP won't be not relevant in 2 years, right? So I think it's very important to stay relevant and also stay close with research community in your field. But in terms of tech transfer office, I think that's more like operational thing, right? So find a good attorney, talk to them, all that stuff. So, yeah.
While he's coming up here, let me ask you another question. Yeah. Now, one of the unique things about Embark is that you do invest pre-seed, meaning pre-product, pre-revenue, pre-customer. How do you come up with a valuation for that kind of situation?
A good question. I don't think I can answer it at some level. Just because the valuation is very odd, and also I think this one is going to be on podcast, right? So if I say something wrong, I might set up a wrong benchmark for all the other founders, right? So, but I would say for the pre-stage, valuation are typically not that high, but I think a lot of them depends on how much money you need, right? So if you look at my suggestion is always for founders raising this type of pre-seed or pre-product type of round. It's to not think about the number as valuation number. It's to think about how much money you need and how much money you want to give up in terms of dilutions, right? So, and there's a certain percentage people want to willing to give, right? And then it's simple math, just basically divided by the number of money you need to raise to build the product divided by the number of dilutions you want to give, right? And that's it, right? That's the valuation you want to aim for, right? But I think that's a good benchmark. But in terms of the actual valuations we see, it's ranging from the very big range, right? So, and a lot of them depends on, what type of founder you are. Are you a first-time founder, just come out of a lab? Or are you like Elon Musk, have a second company, right? I mean, it's different, right? I mean, he can probably raise $1 billion valuation for his pre-seed company. And normal people cannot, right? So I think it's truly different and truly case by case.
Thanks. Hi, Yuping. Very good presentation. My name is Mike Miller. Just a quick question. If you go back to the slide that you had for seed and Series A. Yes. So in each of these situations, what can we expect the VC to want, for each of these columns?
Want in terms of like metrics we want to see or? Oh, okay. Got it.
What percentage
Oh, got it. Got it. So dilution wise, basically. So the dilution wise of the run size. So again, that's a very hard question to answer because every company is different, every fund is different. But I will give you one good metric to do is to based on the lead investor's fund size. So the expectation of the fund or most of the venture fund at early stage is basically, can this investment potentially return our whole fund? Right, that's good to think about it. Right, for example, if you're talking with a $50 million fund and they write $1 million check to it, right, or $2 million check to it, they are expecting the potential exit, whether it's an M&A or IPO, can return $50 million. Right, so and then you do that with your calculation, and then you will know what the percentage they want at some level. Right, and a lot of them depends on their own underwriting, right, and also how aggressive the venture and what the market looks like, right. If you have a five term sheet on the table, then you have the power to negotiate the price, right. And if you have a zero term sheet on the table and you're raising a bridge, then hey, good luck. But I don't think it's the buyer's market, right. So I think a lot of time it's case by case, but again, I don't think there's a standard answer of how much dilution you have to take for each round. Yeah.
My question is about speed. So typically, a lot of times these products take a lot of time to develop, and filing IP and all that stuff takes a lot of time as well. So how much traction are you looking for initially? Because once you have an MVP, are you looking for an exponential growth? How much time? You're talking about months or years, before you actually sort of can get to market? Because some products are a lot more complicated than others.
Very good question. So, as you mentioned, so it depends on what type of companies, right? Let's say you're, it's a B2B enterprise software, whatever, it's deep tech companies, right? So while you're building an MVP, I don't think a lot of people are actually expecting you to go the exponential growth right after building an MVP and start iteration. That's just impossible. I think people are really, that's why we have a category of growth equity, right? It's really to fund your growth, right? So I don't think you need to show that exponential growth right after the product. But what you need to show the timing-wise is you have a potential to be exponentially growing, right? So by that, what you can do is you can, for example, have ROIs with your potential customers, right? Have early tractions, right? And that actually could be an indicator of potential exponential growth. But we are not expecting you hit the exponential growth in 2 months after MVP launch, right? So and also, we are not expecting you to wait for 5 years. Right, so I think it's anything in between, right? So it's not going to be, I don't think any reasonable VC will expect you to hit the growth, exponential growth in 2 months, but people will want to push you once you have the product on the market. People would want you to show your growth potential, right? And that's really Series A for, right? I mean, if you look at here, right, it's you already finish it, you have the commercialization, and you want to prove you can prove a good product market fit, and then you have the Series A money to go to the growth. Right. So, but for MVP, I don't think you need to show the exponential growth yet, but you need to show the potential. That's my short answer.
This may have been on one of your first slides, but what do you see as the minimum investment by somebody who wants to participate in your fund, and what do you see as your minimum investment that you would put into a startup?
So for our investor, like minimum check to our fund, we actually cannot disclose that, but it's large. I would say it's not like a couple hundred K. In terms of our minimum check to startup funders, technically speaking, we can write as small as 250K, but realistically, we need to write at least $500,000 check to $1 million check to make sense, because otherwise, it's too small. And we will never make our fund back, right? So, but realistically, $500,000 to $1 million.
So once you do write that check, what can the founder expect as far as reporting or meetings or whatever the case may be? Is it on a monthly basis, weekly, quarterly, so that you can make sure that they're on track, that they're not squandering that money?
Yeah. Good question, because we do want to monitor at some level, right? So I think it depends on whether we're leading the deal or not leading the deal. So if we led the deal, we actually typically took a board seat. And then, we would not do like weekly meetings, is too much, because you know, we're not operator of the company, right? So we're just an investor, right? So I think the most operating thing should be hands to the entrepreneurs and CEOs and stuff. So we'll do mostly quarterly financials and quarterly reporting for sure. For the company we work pretty closely, we'll do monthly, just costs and stuff. And for the company we didn't lead, definitely quarterly. But for deals we lead, again, like monthly is the most often thing. But we don't need like actually spend a lot of time doing monthly meetings, right? So it's really on the per need base. So.
And if anybody else has questions, please come up front, since I can't bring the microphone to you. Okay. There's a couple of investments that I found interesting that Embark has been involved with. One is NVIDIA, which you mentioned earlier, and they have it's basically a robotic company for an automated warehouse where you can go through it and pick goods and all that. And that was actually more of a success story because I think they had a follow-up of raised about another $28 million. Don't know if they raised additional capital after that. And then there was also another company, they also came to speak. What was interesting about the second one is that the founders are very young, I think 19 and 20-year-old. And that one kind of goes against the management or team when you look at experience and knowledge and things like that, given the fact that they're so young. Can you talk about the results or the experience working with these two type of companies?
Wow, it's a tough question, talking about our portfolio company now. but I think it's a very good question. So. I'll answer the first one. I'll answer the sort of about the age or young founder versus more experienced founders. So for us, we don't really discriminate against age at some level. So we're okay with investing any age. Like even you're like unlike Amazon's legal. If you're 18, you have a company, whatever, it's fine. So but in terms of our experience, the more experienced founders obviously had a better chance to be successful. Right, so that's definitely the consensus. Right? Everybody knows that, right? So, but I think we essentially will make this type of outlier bet to smart kids or like smart young people that are maybe just graduating from PhD or college, because I think these people are oftentimes generating all sides returns, right? Like Bill Gates, for example, right, or Larry Page. I mean, a lot of these people can possibly generating all sides returns, right? And I think as venture capitalists, one of our goals is to chase the outside returns, right? So, and if we always invest in the traditional consensus type of deal, I don't think we can, make outside return at some level, right? So, a lot of the thought behind backing this type of founder is, we truly believe they can grow to be a great leader. Obviously, to be honest, 90% of the time is wrong. Because a lot of young people cannot really grow to be a good leader, right? That's just reality. Because not many good leaders in the world, right? But we still want to take the risk and back potential future leaders even at earlier stage, right? So, and just again, Bill Gates, Larry Page, there's a lot of successful stories on that, right? So, but in terms of our experience, I think younger founder obviously has less chance to be successful.
The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory. Learn more about how Echo Factory can help your business achieve rapid, sustainable growth at echo-factory.com. And get all the details about upcoming Friday Coffee Meetup episodes at fridaycoffeemeetup.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.